Letter A. Let us consider what thoughts we have of, and what judgments we pass upon ourselves. We do not ordinarily, nor ought we at any time, to censure ourselves with too much rigor and severity. We are indeed required again and again to judge ourselves, and it is our duty to do it strictly and severely. Yet we ought not, without just cause, to judge or condemn ourselves for anything, nor are we very forward to do so. Our love to our neighbor should be exercised in this manner also. If he does or speaks anything that is capable of a double sense and interpretation, let us take it as done or spoken in the best sense it is capable of, unless the contrary does manifestly appear by some convincing circumstances, for it is the property of charity to think no evil. We may be much more bold to judge ourselves than others. We are privy to our own principles, from whence our words and actions flow, and to our own intentions in all we speak or do. But the case is otherwise when we take upon us to judge others. Their principles and intentions are known only to themselves until they, some way or another, declare them. The heart, being the hidden man, is known only to God, before whom all things are naked and open. Hebrews 4, verse 13. And to a man's self, what man knoweth the things of a man, save the spirit of a man, which is in him? 1 Corinthians 2, verse 11. Moreover, inordinate self-love has often too great an influence on the judgment we pass upon ourselves, and the corruption of our wills and affections on the judgment we pass upon other men, that we seldom judge aright. As he that has the jaundice, be the object never so white, judges it yellow, his eye being ill-disposed, so the eye of the mind, being affected with the corruption of the heart, puts another color upon that which is most candidly spoken or done. Were our hearts principled with true love to others, we would be as cautious about the judgment we pass on them as about that which we pass upon ourselves. And there is great reason we should be even more cautious from the aforementioned considerations. Letter B. We show love to ourselves in and by our speeches concerning ourselves, and it is our duty so to do. As we ought not to pass too severe a judgment on ourselves in our own minds, so we may not speak that which is false of ourselves. And it is seldom known that any man's tongue falls foul upon himself. Yea, our love to ourselves is and ought to be such as not to suffer our tongue to blab and send abroad all the evil we certainly know by ourselves. It is our duty then in the same manner to show our love to others. Our tongue, which is apt to speak the best of ourselves, should not frame itself to speak the worst we can of our brethren. The apostle charges Titus to put Christians in mind of this, among other duties, to speak evil of no man. Titus 3, verse 2. There are several ways and degrees of evil speaking. First, the first and most notorious is when men are spoke against as evildoers, or doing that which is their duty to do, when they are condemned for that which they ought to be commended. Thus was Jeremiah dealt with in his time, when he faithfully declared the mind of God to the people, "Come, say they, and let us smite him with the tongue," Jeremiah 18, verse 18. The same lot had John from Diotrephes, who prated against him with malicious words, because he had written to have the brethren received, a work of Christian love and charity, which he had no heart unto. 3 John verses 9 and 10. To speak evil of others for that which is their duty is a common thing among men, and too ordinary among some professors. If they are told of a truth, or exhorted to a duty that does not agree with their private opinion, and comport with their carnal interest, how do their hearts rise and their mouths begin to open against such as declare it to them? We may well conceive that the Apostle Paul observed some such thing in his days, when we find him beseeching Christians to suffer the word of exhortation, Hebrews 13, verse 22. And the Apostle Peter also, by charging them in hearing to lay aside all malice and all guile and hypocrisies and envyings and evil speakings, 1 Peter 2, verse 1. Secondly, a second way of evil speaking and a great sin against love and charity is when men raise up false reports of others or set them forward when others have maliciously raised them. To offend in this kind is a great breach of a Christian's good behavior, as the apostle intimates when he said, that they may be in behavior as becometh holiness, and not false accusers, Titus 2 verse 3. It does not at all become the profession of a Christian, whose master is the God of truth, to speak that which is false of any man whatsoever. And therefore, these false accusers are called diabolos, by a name which is usually given to the devil. Thirdly, there may be evil speaking in speaking of such evils as others are really guilty of, such as, first, when a man does industriously search out things as are really evil in others for this very purpose, that he may have something to say against them. Of this, David complains. They search out iniquities, and they accomplish a diligent search. Psalm 64, verse 6. It is a sign that malice boils up to a great height in men's hearts when they are so active to find matter against their neighbors. Love would rather not see or hear of others' failings. Of it, it does and must, busies itself in healing and reforming them to its power. They are also guilty and more guilty of evil speaking than the former, who endeavor to bring others into sin instead of lacking matter against them. Thus, the malicious Pharisees did their utmost to cause Christ himself, had it been possible, to offend, urging him vehemently and provoking him to speak of many things, seeking to catch something out of his mouth that they might accuse him. Luke 11, verse 53. Thirdly, a man may be guilty of evil speaking and offend against the law of love when he makes a fault greater than it is. That is, when he represents a molehill as big as a mountain, thinking that he can never aggravate another's fault too much. You may have seen how boys, by continually blowing with a reed in their nutshells, have raised a little bubble to the size of a small globe, which yet was but a drop of water stuffed with vapor. Well, even so do some men blow up others' faults until they seem very great. But if you examine them, you will find that which made them so was only this, that they were filled up with the other's malice. Some may think themselves excusable in this, as if they showed thereby their zeal against sin. But let them look more narrowly into themselves, and possibly they may find more malice than true zeal lying in the bottom. Fourthly, we may offend in speaking of the faults of others if we are not duly affected in speaking of them. It is too common a thing to speak of others' sins in mirth and with some kind of rejoicing, as if we were tickled with it. All such rejoicing is evil. If Christ should step into your company, as he did into the disciples while they were walking sadly with one another, Luke 24, verse 17, and say unto you while you are speaking of other men's sins to make yourselves merry, what manner of communication have you here? Could it approve yourselves to him in this manner?
It was the fault of the Corinthians that when they heard of the great sin of the incestuous person, they were puffed up when they should have mourned. 1 Corinthians 5 verse 2. Fifthly, a man may be guilty of evil speaking when he speaks of others' faults if his end is not good, as when he does it to please another's humor or satisfy his own, or to lay the person spoken of open to contempt, or the like. Our end in speaking of others' faults is not likely to be good if it is not the reforming of the persons themselves, or the securing and safeguarding of others from being hurt by them, or ensnared by them. Letter C. The third thing by which we show our love to ourselves is by our desires, which are always after something that is good, or rather conceived to be good, for us. Every man wishes himself well. If we should go through the congregation and ask every man what he would have, you know, everyone's desire would be after something that is good, or thought to be so. Then this is that by which we should manifest our love to others, even by desiring their good in all things as our own, that all things, temporal and spiritual, may prosper and succeed well with them, as with ourselves, to the glory of God and their eternal happiness, that they may thrive in their estates, bodies, and souls, as well as we in ours. Thus it ought to be with us, even in reference to such as do not bear the same good will to us. It is our Lord's command that we should pray for them that spite and persecute us, Matthew 5, verse 44. And herein he has left us an excellent example. When his enemies were about that black piece of work, busying themselves and taking away his life, some piercing him, others blaspheming him, he breathes out this request for them: Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Luke 23, verse 34. The like copy is set before us in Stephen, the proto-martyr. While his adversaries were overthrowing stones thick about his ears, he kneeled down and prayed for them. Lord, lay not this sin to their charge. Acts 7, verse 60. How contrary is the spirit of many that profess Christianity to the spirit that appeared in Christ and the primitive Christians, who upon every provocation can be ready to desire the utmost evil to such as do offend them. Were not the Jews Paul's greatest enemies wherever he went? Who was so cruel to him as his own countrymen? Yet see what desires were in his heart for them. Brethren, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that they might be saved. Romans 10, verse 1. And when he stood at the bar before a heathen judge, surrounded with many enemies, what are his wishes for them? He desires that they might all participate in the good he enjoyed, but not in the evil he endured. I would to God that not only thou, but also all that hear me this day, were both almost and altogether such as I am, except these bonds. Acts 26, verse 29. Letter D. Our love to ourselves appears by our endeavors. We do not content ourselves with wishings and wouldings, but we do actually and industriously endeavor that it may be well with us. If a man is hungry and his stomach calls for meat, or if he is pinched with cold and his back calls for clothing, his hand is ready in all good ways to procure it. And so it is in all things else. By this, therefore, ought we to manifest our love to others, even by our endeavors in our capacity and according to our ability to do them good, supplying their wants, spiritually and bodily. God has disposed men into several ranks. He has set some to move in a higher and some in a lower orb. He has dispersed his talents to some more, to some fewer. They that are in a higher place and have more talents may and ought to do more than others. They that stand in a lower place and have fewer talents may and ought to do something for the good of others. Every man, as he has received the gift, in whatsoever kind or degree it may be, so he must minister the same to the souls and bodies of others. If a brother or a sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, "Go in peace," notwithstanding you give them not the things that are needful to the body, what doth it profit? James 2, verses 15 through 16. A man would find little profit in it himself if he should feed himself only with good words and wishes. True love is not in word and tongue only, but in deed and in truth, being contrary to this, endeavoring others' good is to stand up in the way and stop the passage wherein good should flow in upon them, and to be envious at the prosperity of others to attain it, if they were able, without our help. Many men think themselves not well unless it is ill with others. It is not enough for them to be happy unless they see their brethren miserable. Number 2. We have seen now in what things we do and may show love to ourselves. We come now to speak of the manner of loving ourselves, and to show that after the same manner we ought to love others also. We do, or should, love ourselves holily, i.e. and for God. We may not have a divided interest from God. Though God allows us to love others, it must be in order to Him and to His glory. Our love to ourselves, as it must be regulated by the will of God and extended or refrained according to that, so God must be our utmost end in it, whether it is exercised about the obtaining of things temporal or eternal, for body or soul. Salvation itself, although it is our end, must not be our last or utmost end, but that God may be glorified by it, as by all other things. Therefore, in this manner, we must love others, as God has an interest in them, and is or may be glorified by them. And there is no man in the world, but God is or may be glorified by him. Every man is a creature upon whose soul there is, in a sort, the image of God, and does him some service in the place wherein he stands. God called Cyrus, a heathen, his shepherd, Isaiah 44, verse 28, and his anointed, Isaiah 45, verse 1, and he did him eminent service in his generation. The same may be said of every other man in some degree and proportion. God has given him some gifts wherein he is and may be serviceable to him, at least in the affairs of his providential kingdom. And besides, all men, having immortal souls within them, are capable of blessedness with God forever in the kingdom of glory. They who are at present enemies to God may be reconciled and made friends. What was the most glorious saint, now in heaven, but an enemy to God once when here on earth? Says the apostle. We think ourselves, or we ourselves, were sometime foolish, disobedient, serving diverse lusts and pleasures, living in malice, hateful, and hating one another. But after that, the kindness and love of God, our Savior, toward man, appeared. Not by works of righteousness which we have done, but according to His mercy, He saved us, by the washing of regeneration and renewing of the Holy Ghost. Titus 3, verses 3 through 5. Objection. How could David then say, "Do not I hate them, O Lord, that hate thee? And am I not grieved with those that rise up against thee? I hate them with a perfect hatred." Psalm 139, verses 21 through 22. He says that he hated them perfectly and approves himself to God in the thing. Do I not hate them, O Lord? Answer. There is a twofold hatred, odium simplex et odium redundans in personam, as the schools speak, a simple hatred and a hatred redounding to the person. A simple hatred, which is the sin of any man, is our duty. Ye that love the Lord hate evil, Psalm 97, verse 10. But to hate the person of the sinner would be our sin. As we are to abhor that which is evil, so we must cleave to that which is good, Romans 12, verse 9. David, who was a man after God's own heart, knew how to distinguish between the sin and the person. See how he expresses himself elsewhere. I hate the work of them that turn aside, Psalm 101, verse 3. Not them, but the work of them. And he hated their sin, saying, it shall not cleave to me. And hear him again. I hate every false way, Psalm 119, verse 104. This shows us plainly that he hated sin perfectly. He hated sin so as that it should not cleave to him. He hated it wherever he found it, every false way. For what is perfect hatred? And Augustine here describes it very well. Post et perfecto, ego odis ut ne omnes propter vita odoris ne vita propter omnes diligis. This is to hate with perfect hatred, not to hate men for their sin's sake, nor to love the sin for the men's sake. This is one manner how to love our neighbor as ourselves. It must be holily. Our love to ourselves is, or should be, orderly. We must first and chiefly love our souls, and then our bodies. The soul is of far greater worth than the body. A world of things for the body will stand a man in no stead if his soul is lost, and where the soul goes, either to a place of bliss or torment, the body must follow after. And therefore, when we are charged to take heed to ourselves, we are charged to keep our souls diligently. Only take heed to thyself, and keep thy soul diligently. Deuteronomy 4, verse 9. If the soul is safe, all is safe. And if the soul is lost, all is lost. In like manner, we ought to love our neighbor. We must desire and endeavor that it may be well with him in every respect, both as to his body and outward estate, but chiefly that his soul may prosper, and his outward concerns, as they may be consistent with that third epistle of John. I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper, and be in health, as thy soul prospereth. 3 John verse 2. Letter A. We must seek the conversion of those that are unconverted, lest their souls be lost forever. If we can be instrumental in this, we show the greatest love imaginable. To give a man bread when he is hungry, or clothing when he is naked, is something. But to convert a soul to God is a greater kindness by much. Brethren, if any one of you do err from the truth, and one convert him, let him know that he shall save a soul from death. James 5, verses 19 through 20. He speaks of it as a great thing when he says, let him know that he shall save a soul from death. Letter B. We should show our love to the souls of others by seeking and endeavoring to the increase of their faith, holiness, and comfort. As we should not be content to go to heaven alone, but carry along with us as many as we can, so we should not satisfy ourselves to see them creep lamely thither, but gird up the loins of their minds for them, that they may more strenuously and with the more cheerfulness and comfort walk thither. Thus John endeavored to bring the saints to higher degrees of fellowship with God. That which we have seen and heard, declare we unto you, that you also may have fellowship with us. And truly our fellowship is with the Father and with His Son, Jesus Christ. 1 John 1 verse 3. They had this fellowship before in measure and degree. But He would bring them to higher degrees of it, as appears by what follows. These things I write unto you, that your joy may be full. That's verse 4. Letter C. Does not our love to ourselves go out freely? What we have at hand, we are ready to take, and we stand in need of it. A wise man observed it to be a gift which God ordinarily gives to the children of men, to eat and drink and to enjoy the fruit of all his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life. Ecclesiastes 3 verse 13. In the like manner, we should go forth to others. If our neighbor stands in need of forgiveness, we should forgive freely, as we expect God or man should forgive us. If he needs a gift from us, we should give freely and open our hearts readily to supply his wants according to the ability God has given us, as we expect that God or man should give it to us if we were in the like necessity. The apostle commends the Macedonians for this, that when their brethren stood in need of their charity, to their power, yea, and beyond their power, they were willing of themselves. 2 Corinthians 8 verse 3. To give freely and readily adds much to the goodness of a good work. The way to be rich in good works is to be ready to distribute, willing to communicate. 1 Timothy 6 verse 18. Letter D. We love ourselves unfeignedly. No man conceals his intentions with himself or endeavors to feed himself with good words only, but it is very real and cordial to himself in all things. And thus it is required that we should be so to others. God desires truth in the inward parts. Psalm 51, verse 6. He would have us true to him and true to one another. My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. 1 John 3 verse 18. Let love be without dissimulation. Romans 12 verse 9. Outward and dissembled love is little better than inward and real hatred. If blessing is only in the mouth, cursing is not likely to be far from the heart. They bless with their mouth, but they curse inwardly. Psalm 62, verse 4. Such a blessing with the mouth had Christ from the Pharisees. Master, we know that thou art true, and teachest the way of God in truth. Neither carest thou for any man, for thou regardest not the person of man. Matthew 22, verse 16. Very well said. But Jesus perceived their wickedness. Verse 18. They came with words of love and respect to cover the wickedness of their hearts and lacked that inward affection that Titus is commended for toward the Corinthians. 2 Corinthians 7 verses 6 through 7. Letter E. We do not only love ourselves truly and sincerely, but with some fervency. There is always some heat as well as heart and love to ourselves. You may observe it ordinarily that when self is concerned in anything, the affection which is moved about it has some heat in it. And if it is anger, there is heat in anger. If it is love, there is heat in love. Indeed, all men are very apt to exceed and go much beyond their bounds when self is concerned. Because if they were to love themselves with all their hearts, with all their soul, and with all their mind. However, it is allowable that a man may be warm in love to himself, especially to his soul, which is the best part of himself. Well then, our love to others must not be cold. When the matter of love is good, it is good to be zealously affected in it. Galatians 4 verse 18. When Paul understood the fervent mind of the Corinthians toward him, as he was a servant of Christ for the good of their souls, it did affect him with great joy. 2 Corinthians 7 verse 7. Let our love to others be first pure, and then it is not likely to be too fervent. Seeing ye have purified your souls in obeying the truth, see that ye love one another with a pure heart, fervently. 1 Peter 1 verse 22. Letter F. We love ourselves very tenderly. No man ever hated his own flesh, but nourisheth it and cherisheth it. Ephesians 5 verse 29. The body is wounded or pained, how tender are we of it? The eye will look to it very carefully, and it may weep over it. The hand will diligently keep anything off that might hurt or offend it, and is ready to apply anything to it for the cure of it, with the greatest tenderness that may be. After the same manner, we ought to express our love to others. It is required of us that we be kind one to another, tender-hearted. Ephesians 4 verse 32. First, when others are under sufferings, we should be so tender as to have a quick sense of them in ourselves. Other sufferings should work compassion and cause a fellow feeling in us, so as to make us weep with them that weep, Romans 12 verse 15, and to be bound with them that are in bonds, Hebrews 13 verse 3. When Nehemiah heard of the affliction of his people, though he himself was in a better condition, he sat down and wept and mourned certain days, Nehemiah 1 verse 4. We see that the beasts themselves are touched with the sufferings of any of their kind. If one of the herd makes an outcry or declares his sufferings by his moaning, well, how sensible are the rest of them? How do they come around him and show their readiness to yield him help if it were in their power? How much more should humanity cause men to show what a tender regard they have of the sufferings and afflictions of other men? Secondly, we should be tenderly affected towards others when they are overtaken in a fault, and not be too rigid and severe in dealing with them. And the more they themselves are afflicted, the more tender we ought to be toward them. We should consider how we would desire to be dealt with ourselves if we should be in the same or like fault, and accordingly behave ourselves toward them. If any man be overtaken with a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself. Galatians 6 verse 1. Thirdly, we should show ourselves tenderly affected toward others and their wants and necessities, and yield them relief with the feeling of their wants ourselves. Job, when he was in a full and plentiful condition and a state himself, was deeply affected by the necessitous condition of other men. Did not I weep for him that was in trouble? Was not my soul grieved for the poor? Job 30 verse 25. The way to get this tenderness toward others is to put ourselves in this or that man's case. That is, hungry, thirsty, naked, etc. Until we find our hearts to grow soft and tender toward them, and we are able to draw out our own souls to them in giving them bread or whatever else they need. Isaiah 58 verse 10. But the greatest tenderness is to be exercised toward such persons as labor under soul troubles and necessities, because the soul is of a quick sense and more capable of feeling than the body. Christ's greatest sufferings are in his soul. Therefore, all men who are spiritually distressed under some temptation or soul affliction are deeply distressed. And as they stand in need of counsel or comfort, our souls should go forth in administering it to them, even as Paul was ready to have imparted not only the gospel of God, but his own soul to them who were dear unto him. 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 8.